Professor Ross Dowling is the Foundation Professor of Tourism at Edith Cowan University in Western Australia. He's written a book called Cruise Ship Tourism, co-founded the Cruise Research Society, is the sole advisor to Cruise Down Under, and has lectured on board many cruise ships. And the tragedy of the Costa Concordia off the shores of Italy has focused attention on cruise ship tourism. So has the industry grown too quickly? Is there enough emphasis on safety? And why are we seeing bigger and bigger ships? And just how big is cruising in Australia, and how much do Australians embrace it? All of those questions and more I'm about to put to Professor Ross Dowling. I actually spoke to him a few hours ago before we came on air, and my first question was to ask his reaction to the Costa Concordia tragedy.
Yeah, well, certainly pretty tragic what has happened, and from what everything that we've read and seen, it's obvious that it shouldn't have happened. So it's been a massive error of judgment. So it's certainly not something that's usual in the cruise world, very unusual, but it has happened and very tragic.
We've certainly seen some incidents recently as far as maritime disasters are concerned, but they haven't usually involved passenger ships. Have this sort of thing happened before, though?
Well, it has. Of course, everyone knows the Titanic 100 years ago, but there's also been a number of ferries that have gone down and been very overcrowded. And so there have been a number of people that have been lost at sea. And the odd, there is the odd sinking that has, you know, a few people that have been killed. But this has caught everyone's imagination, A, because it's on such a big ship. Two, it's in the Mediterranean. That's very well charted seas, and so by right shouldn't have happened. And third, of course, it's you know, it's just, it seems like a colossal series of mistakes have been made.
Now, for those like me who've never been on a cruise, a passenger cruise liner like this, can you give us an idea of how much emphasis is put on safety and safety drills, lifeboat drills, that sort of thing? Because there has been a lot of talk and, of course, some footage shown of the confusion on board the Costa Concordia.
Yeah, well, look, normally you, I mean, I do a lot of cruising. I work in the cruise world. My wife and I lecture on cruise ships. We go on lots of cruise ships in various parts of the world. And what normally happens is cruise ships, of course, are very safety conscious. They're like the airlines, and there's always briefings at the start. And there's always a lifeboat drill right at the start of every cruise, and that's taken very seriously by the crew and usually by the passengers, not so seriously, but I think all the passengers I've ever spoken to are very pleased to have had it. And they just feel reassured, I guess. And it seems in this case that when the ship left the port that it sailed from 2 hours before it hit the rock, there hadn't been that briefing done for any passengers that might have got on. So that was one problem. There's another series of problems that's happened with the Costa Concordia too, and that is if the ship had stayed where it was in a sort of reasonably deep water, and if the it seems from everything I've read and seen that if the captain had acted on that emergency situation after they hit the rock straight away, if he'd acted, they could have lowered the lifeboats down both sides of the ship, and probably you would have got it most, if not all, off the ship safely. But what he did was, A, took too long to declare an emergency, and then B, by that time the ship was taking on water. He then drove the ship to the shore. It was, you know, shallower water, and of course as the ship was filling up with water, it just keeled over to one side, and effectively blocked half the lifeboats from being able to be launched.
On the topic of those safety drills, though, there are plenty of cruisers that will, say, stop at Adelaide, stop at Melbourne, stop in Sydney, stop in Brisbane. So is it done for everyone on board at the beginning of every leg of every cruise, or should it be done that way?
It's done for the new passengers. So you generally will only do a lifeboat drill once on the ship. So basically the port you get on, it's the drill is only for those passengers who've got on at that port. So everybody who's got on has been through the drill. Certainly on every cruise ship I've been on, Cunard, Silver Sea, Orion, a whole lot of others, and basically on every single one of those, it's always done before the ship leaves the port where you embark.
I wonder in the particular case of the Costa Concordia, where a lot of power was lost, although they could still hear public address systems working and announcements being made, is all of that taken into account too, that there may in fact be no power to make that sort of announcement and lighting for people to see their way to decks and whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every ship has a backup, you know, it's a completely duplicated system. So everything, power, water, communications, sewage, everything is duplicated on board. So if one's knocked out, the other kicks in straight away. But it seems in this case everything was knocked out and just took too long. So it was in pitch black. They had no, pretty much in the dark, and everything was in confusion. It seems like also there was no definite chain of command from the top. There was, it seems definitely sure that the even the the crew weren't that well informed as to what to do.
What will this mean for the cruise industry?
Well, I've been asked that quite a lot, and I have to say that what it will mean, I think, is two things. One is, well, in the first instance, it's both bad and good. The bad part is Costa brand is going to take a hammering, obviously. It's a European fund ship. It's an Italian fund ship. It's a flagship company. This was their flagship. Concordia was their biggest ship. So the Costa brand will definitely take a battering for this. I think all coming out of it will be a far greater regard for safety issues now. We know here in Australia when the unfortunate incident with Diane Brimble, as a result of that, it's meant a whole raft of safety and security issues which have been introduced into the cruise industry here in Australia. And I think that this incident is going to have ramifications right around the world, and from now on, every CEO of all the cruise companies are going to say, okay, we've got to take safety seriously, we've got to have systems in place, we've got to have clear briefings from the captain down, we've got to make sure that there's clear communications and so on. But what it's going to mean to cruising is probably not a lot in this part of the world. I think that people will just still keep on cruising, and that cruising, which is in a boom here in Australia, is going to grow.
And let's talk about that boom. What has brought all this on? Why has the cruise industry boomed so much in recent years?
Well, I think it's boomed in recent years simply because of one major factor in that. Well, maybe two. But the first one is economics. The cruise costs have come down. It's like originally jet travel, was expensive and you had to be wealthy to fly, and now we're in the age of mass jet travel or mass air travel, so that it's accessible to anyone. So anybody here in Australia now can jump on a plane a few thousand dollars or over in Europe or anywhere in the world. Well, it's the same with the cruise ships. It used to only be for the wealthy, but now with the big ships and the cost effectiveness of passengers on board, basically cruising's become more affordable. So Australians are going cruising in big number. And the other thing is that it's not only to have the prices come down, but it makes good sense to be in a situation where you just basically pay once largely up front, and you've got your transport, you've got your hotel, you've got your meals, you've got your entertainment. So it's good economic sense. And so, Australians have discovered that, and they're going to the water like fish.
Well, just as planes have got bigger over the years and seem to continue to that, ships have done the same. Is bigger always better?
Not necessarily. Look, we're talking Costa Concordia is about 114,000 tonnes, the biggest ship that's ever come down to Australia. Cruise ship is the Queen Mary 2 that's been in all around Australia a number of times, and that is 150,000 tonnes. But to give you an idea of scale, the biggest ships in the world, the Oasis of the Seas and the Allure of the Seas, they're 225,000 tonnes, so they're huge. They are twice the size of the Concordia, which is already one of the biggest ships in the world. So we're talking about these ships right out there right now sailing the world that are double the size of Concordia, that take 4,000 to 5,000 passengers and have another 2,000 or 3,000 crew. So we're talking the size of many, small Australian towns. So is bigger better? Well, you're on a floating resort, so you couldn't do everything in a cruise that's on offer. It's just a completely, being in a totally different world. But there's many people that are cruising that don't like the big ships. They think they're too impersonal. They think they're too large. The big ships can only go to certain ports. They just can't go everywhere. And so there's also a large clientele here of Australians who prefer much smaller ships, which are more intimate and can get into more remote places.
Well, that is a big point that's been made about some of the very big ships plying the seas these days, is they can't get into what are regarded as major ports around the world. How do they get around that problem?
Well, they don't. There's only two ways you can do it, really, and that is you don't go there, or else you have to get in there by ship tender, which is basically the lifeboats, which go back and forth, so that the ships, if they can't get into the dock, they generally will be offshore, and then the ship's lifeboats act as tenders, and they run basically like a shuttle service from the ship to the shore. But you can imagine trying to get 4,000 or 5,000 passengers off that way. You can't do it. So basically the big ships are limited in the ports they can go to.
Even in the best of circumstances, a pretty big ship, when it's in a well-functioning port, it takes a lot of time to get thousands of passengers off and thousands of passengers on. In the case of the Costa Concordia, was it arguably a stroke of good fortune that it was so close to the shore?
Yes and no, like any situation. I mean, yes, and that, yes, it was close to the shore, so the bulk of people got off. But as I said before, I believe, and from the evidence I've heard, that if it had just stayed where it had hit the rock, just a little bit off from the shore, if the captain had ordered straight away the lifeboats down, you know, just even, look, hey, this is an emergency, we might need to do this, but let's just be prepared here, let's get the lifeboats straight into the water, and just while we're assessing the situation, if he'd done that, then, you know, it would have meant double the lifeboats could have been used, as it was only half. So in a way, he said, look, we better get the ship quickly close to shore to you know, get everybody off. But in doing that in this instance, it didn't actually help the passengers, and that's why you've got some that have unfortunately died as a result.
This morning on Overnights, as we talk about cruise ship tourism, our guest is Professor Ross Dowling, Foundation Professor of Tourism at Edith Cowan University in Western Australia, and he's written a book, Cruise Ship Tourism, and co-founded the Cruise Research Society, and as he told us earlier, regularly lectures on board many ships. In the case of the Costa Concordia, extraordinary technology available these days would have been built into a ship like this, which should have come up with... people are asking, why weren't there warnings, why weren't there alarms going off long before this ship hit what it did? Does it just go to show that despite the enormous technology or a range of technology available to either a pilot or a ship captain, it still can come down to the human being in charge?
Absolutely. You're so right there. There's nothing like you can have, and that ship would have had sonar, radars, GPS, satellite, everything in the world that's electronic, that's up to date at its fingertips. But, you know, there's nothing like having, a pair of eyes looking out and telling you you're too close to shore. Now, I heard tonight, it might have been reported earlier this morning or yesterday, your time, it might have been reported that what I heard over here was the captain. There's been a report that said the captain, in talking to the judge that's, you know, basically interrogating him at the moment, a leaked report to the Italian media was, I heard it broadcast here in Australia today, that... you know, he said, look, basically, he just sailed too close to the shore and wanted to...
I heard a report he was saluting a former captain who lived on the island or the shore it was passing, and it was a salute to a former captain colleague. Does that sort of thing happen very often? Do captains salute former captains?
It does. I have been on ships where they've, you know, maybe gone a bit close to something to you know, show the passengers, and so that thing does go on. But I can assure you now, it probably will go on a lot less. And I just cast, you mentioned, you know, about the pilots too, and I'll just throw our listeners' minds back to 1979. I'm from New Zealand originally, and that year the Qantas and Air New Zealand planes were making overflights of the Antarctic. Now, you may recall that an Air New Zealand jet slammed into Mount Erebus and killed everybody, and the outcome of all of that was immediately all the overflights were stopped. But that came out in the investigation later. Two things happened. One was that the coordinates of the flight path were punched in wrong, so they just somebody had mixed up the numbers, and it was due to put the flight path straight into the side of Mount Erebus. But the other thing is, these pilots weren't supposed to ever go less than 30,000 feet. Now, the highest mountain in the Antarctic is of course a lot less than that, but they regularly, the pilots, would go down lower to give the passengers on board a better look at the Antarctic. So in this particular case, the pilot, you know, went down low. It was a whiteout condition. He went down low. He thought he was in safe ground. By the time he got the message from his electronic machines that he needed to, you know, there was something in front of him, and he put the nose of the plane up in the air, it was too late.
Mm.
So human error again. You know, there was a pilot there trying to do what probably every other pilot before him had done, probably, I'm presuming, Qantas and Air New Zealand, that is flown lower in order to give people a view of the Antarctic and maybe their money's worth, in quotes. And on this particular case, it didn't pay off. Well, the captain, I heard a report to, you know, that basically said the captain of the Costa Concordia said he had done that manoeuvre two or three or four times before, gone quite close to the island in a sort of form of salute. And on this particular occasion, he left his turn out of the island too late. And
okay. Can I just go to the role of the captain, Francesco Scatino, the captain of the Costa Concordia, to ask a silly question? Most of us assume he's the captain, he's the boss. Does the buck stop with him once the ship is at sea?
Absolutely, 100%.
So he's the man to make decisions. If someone else on the bridge the other night had concerns, would they raise them with the captain?
Absolutely.
Or?
Oh, yep. Absolutely, yeah. You know, it's their duty to. I mean, on these ships, you know, those of us amongst the listeners who have been on cruises would regularly see the captain walk around the ship while it's sailing, you know, around the ocean. The captain will be dining with passengers on occasion, maybe two or three nights. The captain will hold a welcome evening as the ship leaves port. He'll hold probably a cocktail function or a dance night, another night, and so on. So, you know, the captain's obviously not on the bridge taking control 24 hours a day. He's got to sleep and he's also got other duties to do. And it generally is a he. I've never seen a female captain, by the way, of a ship.
But
it's his responsibility. The buck stops with him.
If he, as has also been reported, he has told that judge he slipped and fell into a lifeboat and had no choice but to leave the ship, should he have got back on board? I mean, is it still regarded in maritime law that the captain should be the last to leave if you have to abandon ship?
That's a unwritten rule there that the captain is always the last one off the vessel. So even if he slipped and fell, as is alleged to have happened, though that's not what some passengers have recorded. Even if he did, his first duty would have been to turn straight around and get back up. I mean, you know, it seems almost laughable to me to hear that explanation given.
Yeah, well, I'm sure in the coming days, weeks and months, much more will emerge about that. But no doubt about it, most fingers seem to be pointing in Francesco Scatino's direction at this stage. Just before we let you go, Professor Ross Dowling, the cruise industry for Australia and Australians, are we one of the biggest embracers of cruising?
Absolutely. Look, I've done a lot of research on this, and per capita, in other words, for the total amount of people in Australia, we'd have to be the world's greatest cruisers. We've got 500,000 people, roughly, who cruised last year. So that is a phenomenal amount of people. That's, you know, one in every, 500,000 over 22 million, roughly one in every 40 or 50 people went on a cruise last year. And that's very, very big. So of the world's roughly 20 million people who cruised, that's everybody cruising all over the world, whether on freighter ships, river cruises, or the big ships like Costa Concordia. Of those 20 million, 500,000 came from Australia. That is a huge number. And that number has been increasing every year for the last decade. So Australians have really embraced cruising in a big manner. And that's been shown in a couple of things. One is just the increase in numbers, but also to reflect that now all the major cruise lines are bringing down to Australia their ships, which they position in the northern winter, the southern summer season. And so the confidence of the cruise industry in Australia is shown by the fact that all these big cruise lines are bringing ships down here now.
Professor Ross Dowling, you have mentioned that you and your wife cruise regularly and lecture on cruises. What do you lecture about?
Well, all ships, most of the big ships have lecturers who are either what's called special interest lecturers or destination lecturers. Now, the special interest lecturers could be, you know, like the ship's going to Vietnam, and it might be the former U.S. ambassador to Vietnam, or on other ships you've had, you know, you'll have Maggie Beer speak, you know, and you'll have basically people who are known either within that country or internationally for their particular expertise. They could be talking about anything at all. They could be an author and talking about books. They could be politician, former politician, and so on. So that's special interest lecturing. The other type of lecturer is destination lecturers who know the country that you're going to, and so they're telling about the history, the culture, the geography, the people, and the tips about the country before the ship arrives in the next port. Now, my wife, she is has been a naturopath, and she gives talks on like natural approaches to women's health, and the women and men find that very interesting, actually. And what I do is either speak about my expertise, which is I'm an expert in three areas: geological tourism around the world, geotourism, ecotourism, and also the cruise industry. So I can give talks on any of those subjects. But I also, because I've travelled so much, I'm an environmental scientist now, working as a professor who works in tourism development, and that's taken me all over the world. So because I've been to so many countries, I also talk about the destinations. So when I go on cruise ships, I do a sort of a combination of my own special interest plus destinational lecturing.
All right, and just before we let you go, there is talk that there's a lot of oil on board the Costa Concordia. Could take 3 weeks to pump it out if they can. Can it be salvaged?
Yes, it can be salvaged. They can get that out of there, and that's not a difficult job.
But... Oh, sorry, not so much the oil, but the ship.
Oh, the ship, sorry. Okay. The short answer to that is I don't think it can be. I think that ship there is either going to, if it's refloated, there's so many holes in it now, I'm just not sure that, I doubt that it can be. And if they do, it would need some of the biggest lift ships in the world to get back up. And then who would want to sail on it again anyway? I think that they've got a straight choice here.
It'd be a massive operation and a very expensive one, wouldn't it? But if it can't be salvaged, what happens to it?
It'll just sit there and it'll become a, probably a little bit like we've done with in Australia with some of our former Navy vessels, where we've sunk them and used them as dive wrecks. And I mean, that sounds silly, but this will now, if it stays there and doesn't move and it's decided it's too costly or too difficult to salvage it, then it will become a tourist attraction, and eventually it may even become a dive site. It just depends. I mean, there's people that have died there and all sorts, so it's a little bit different to just sinking a former warship that's been stripped of everything. But it is also in a natural reserve too, reserve, so here's another problem.
But nonetheless, as has already been suggested, prime fodder for Hollywood?
Yeah, probably. Absolutely.
Okay. We do appreciate your expertise and sharing it with us this morning. It's been very kind of you to join us.
No trouble at all, and I'm sure that your listeners are going to have now quite a lot to talk about in relation to their own cruises, so that will be interesting.
I certainly hope so. Professor Ross Dowling, Foundation Professor of Tourism at Edith Cowan University in Western Australia, and his book is Cruise Ship Tourism, and he co-founded the Cruise Research Society, sole advisor to Cruise Down Under, and as we've heard, lectures on board many international and domestic cruise ships. Kay from Western Australia is on the line. Hello, Kay.
Good morning, Tony.
You're a cruiser.
I'm definitely a cruiser. I'm one of those hooked ones.
How did it start?
Started a first trip in 2006, flew to Singapore and did up to Bangkok, and just got hooked from then on.
And did you go with that sense of anticipation, sort of thinking, I think I'm really going to like this, or you didn't know what you were in for?
A little bit nervous at first, yeah. Didn't know what we were in for. Saw the size of the ship and we thought, oh, no problems, no worries at all.
And so you've pretty much made it a regular thing if you've been on 10 and about to go on your 11th?
It's 9 and going on our 10th.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll be in 2 weeks on the Queen Mary.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so she's coming to Fremantle from South Africa.
Yeah.
And she's doing the Captain Cook circumnavigation of Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And but I didn't realise that Captain Cook went to Bali, but that's where we're going anyhow. So
what would you say to someone who is a novice cruiser who's going to go? What are the tips that you give?
I tell people that it's one place where you can go, where you can go out to a restaurant, have a 3-course meal. You can go and see the latest movie. Then after that, you can go and see a live show. Then maybe go to the casino. Maybe go do a bit of dancing, go to the nightclub, and you're only 2 minutes from your bed.
And have you done a variety of cruises and the sizes of vessels as well?
We try to do cruises that leave from Fremantle and return to Fremantle only because we're not keen flyers.
Mm-hmm.
So you're limited in the choice that as far as majority of them go to Asia or New Zealand or around Australia.
And how many passengers would you say is the total on the biggest one you've been on?
The biggest one will be the Queen Mary that we've been on, but we kind of like the cruise ships, around about the 77,000 to 78,000 tonne.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Sun Princess. We've been on that four times. I adore the Sun Princess. It's just everything about it is incredible.
Okay. And just before you go, on the safety aspects, you've been through all those drills that Ross Dowling
yes,
was talking about, and you've never had any concerns where you've thought...
Not at all.
Okay. And you practice them, everybody takes them seriously. You know how
everyone.
You know how on aeroplanes half the people say, oh, I go on that many planes, I don't need to listen to this instruction and so on and so forth, and you look around, you sort of think... Oh, well, if we do go down, I hope you're not the one going, oh, how do you do this up again? How
That's
do you do that?
Correct.
I didn't pay attention. So everyone pays attention. They take it seriously.
They certainly do. Hmm. And especially with the children, they take more concern about if there's children on board. They actually go to the parents and show the parents how to do the children's life jackets.
Okay. Thank you very much for giving us your impressions of cruising, and I hope the Queen Mary's everything you want it to be.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it immensely.
Should be great. Thanks, Kay. Lynette's in Melbourne, and good morning to you, Lynette. You've been on cruises just more recently. You've taken to the seas.
Yes, we have. The last 2 years, we went on the Dawn Princess around New Zealand, and also this year just gone to the South Pacific, and found it absolutely amazing. The crew was wonderful. It was about 2,200 people on it. But I am a bit concerned about what happened on this ship, because you think, well, you know, the hospitality crew that seemed to be around everywhere, you know, these people didn't see many sailors, and with the lights off and everything, I'd be a little bit concerned now, in fact, whether they're capable of actually not sending you back to your cabin, but actually keeping you at the stations. You know, these people are trained in hospitality from all parts of the world. A lot of them on our ship was from the Philippines.
Mm.
It was truly magnificent. We said everything was there for first-time cruisers. We just found it absolutely amazing. Like, there's nothing you have to do. You know what your costs are going to be. We left from Melbourne to go around New Zealand and from Sydney to go into the South Pacific. But now we're starting to think, oh, my God, if one person's, the head of the command, how did this happen? It's just horrendous, actually, Tony.
I hope you take some comfort from Professor Dowling's words, where he said any of these sort of things that have gone on in the past, where they're trying to show off or salute former captains who live on the seashore and they sail past them or give the passengers a better view, they'll all certainly be backing off from doing that sort of showboating, as it were.
Because
this has happened. But interestingly, Paper Chucker says on the SMS that this accident is the fault of the skipper, by the sound of it, but if we all stop doing things after an incident like this, we would never do anything or go anywhere again.
That's true. It was just horrible, and we've hated watching it, but truly it is a magnificent way to see a bit of the world.
Yeah, well,
and,
as I said earlier,
don't regret it.
I would imagine if you can't relax, if you don't come back relaxed and wound down after a cruise, then I don't think you'd ever wind down, would you?
Oh, no, Tony. I can truly say the Princess cruises were wonderful, and the crew were amazing. So it's a tragedy. There's no other word for it.
Yeah, certainly is, but hopefully the actions of what looks like being one man won't reflect on the entire industry like
that. We hope not.
Well,
so let's just be brave. I suppose you're right.
Exactly.
You know, you could be stiff, but...
Happy time. Well,
wonderful.
As I say, you wouldn't walk out the door if you didn't know what was going to happen.
That's true.
Good on you, Lynette. Thank you. Let's go to Ringwood now, and Mark's with us. Hello, Mark. You've travelled a few times on the high seas yourself with the family.
I have done, Tony. As a teenager, I went on two cruises with my folks, and I've been on three cruises since then.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I was going to say is, whilst what's happened has been a tragedy, one of the things I found over the five cruises, four of them were with a English-based cruise line. I won't mention the company names. And one of them was with a Russian boatline.
Yep.
What I found on the Russian boatline, I actually had got myself quite sick, had a slight break in the skin on my feet, and there were bugs in the shower water, and finished up with a mild case of septicemia by the time I came back to Australia.
Ooh.
So, not as shattering as a...
So it wasn't seasickness, it was an infection picked up.
It was an infection, yeah.
Wow.
I guess they just assumed people didn't have breaks in their skin and they didn't have the same sort of, I suppose, chlorine or whatever they do with the water on the other ships that they did on this one.
Have you been since then?
I have. Actually went on my last cruise on my honeymoon with my wife about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was with the English-based company. It was fine.
And you'd certainly say that there's a lot that appeals to it, but I suppose you could understand there are some people who might find it a little too laid back, possibly.
Well, the big appeal that I discovered early on was the fact that when you go away on a holiday, you're always watching TV, listen to radio, being kept informed, finger on the pulse. On a cruise, in fact, certainly the early ones, and even the most recent one 10 years ago, you go away on your cruise, you come back 2 weeks later, you have no idea pretty much what's been happening. And to me, that's the definition of a true holiday.
Okay, you like being cut off from your usual sources of news and information in that sense.
In a way, it's a bit uncomfortable the first couple of days, but when you come back, I really noticed the difference between the state of relaxation after I came back compared to how it was before I left.
Yeah, do they have radio stations on board those cruise ships?
Oh, they have entertainment, but I don't know if they... Well, nowadays with the internet, it probably doesn't apply as much. But
just occurred to me, I'm finishing up in a couple of weeks on this gig. I might get in touch with the cruise ships, and if they have little community radio stations, I could go and get a job there broadcasting and get a free cruise. That
exactly. Well, I know they usually get the DJ on board, and they have entertainment, as the one the ladies mentioned before, with the live shows on the ship most nights.
And of course, Ross Dowling, our guest before, he lectures on them, and he mentioned Maggie Beer. She talks about food on them, and I know lots of people with all sorts of different fields of expertise do, in fact, go on those cruise ships and give lectures as well. So
for sure. Well, in fact, the last one I went on, I think Maria Venuti was on that one.
Okay. Oh, what did she talk about?
I don't know if we really noticed.
Yeah. You were distracted, were you? Yeah. Maybe I could go on and do a lecture series on being on talkback radio on ABC and the characters you meet and the things that you get told, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm sure that'd be very entertaining.
I'm working this into an idea. Yeah, definitely. Linda says on the SMS, an old sailor taught me to wear thongs in all but your own home shower.
Yeah, so that's probably good advice.
Okay. Good on you, Mark. Thank you for sharing with us this morning. Let's go to Townsville now. Alex waiting for us. Alex, you worked at sea for 20 years.
Yeah, mate. I've worked on dive tourist boats out of Townsville and big charter boats. Up here we've got an old saying, and it's there's two types of skipper, those that have hit the reef and those that are about to. And an accident's going to happen to any skipper at any sort of stage.
Yeah.
But the actions of that skipper, where he just got off the boat and sort of left everybody to their own devices, was absolutely diabolical.
It does. From what we've heard so far, it does seem difficult to comprehend, doesn't it? That
he's just panicked. That's what I reckon he's happened. He's panicked. He's gone, oh, my God, what the hell am I going to do? And he just doesn't know what he's doing. And for somebody who's supposed to be experienced and have that level of knowledge of the sea and what his role is as a skipper, it's just uncomprehensible to be able to do something like that. We've always been told that the main thing is if ever we do start going down, first thing we do is get the passengers off, get them into a life raft, make sure they're safe, and do head counts, all that sort of stuff, take names, everything we can from all the way, gather as much information as we can, find out if there's anyone still on board before we actually leave the vessel.
Is that a responsibility that sits comfortably with you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been a crew member and on boats, and that's because we know where everything is, all the safety equipment and everything like that. That is our main function on the boat, is safety first, fun second.
Mm. And make sure somebody's called for help or you set off one of the EPIRBs.
Yeah,
or something
you get
like
your EPIRBs and stuff like that to set off.
Mm.
But, you know, I mean, surely that skipper, to get off the boat and make sure that, you know, sort of sit there and say, OK, everybody, follow me sort of thing is just absolutely wrong.
Yeah, and many have already suggested it certainly points to his guilt, you know, if he, in fact, was showboating and had taken this off course and responsible, he thought, this is me, I've done this.
Yeah.
He might have done that. So, yeah, it'd be a different time instead. But you say he's definitely, even if, as he's alleging now, apparently, that he slipped and fell into a lifeboat.
Lucky
one of the few lifeboats that was able to be launched happened to be right underneath him. A lot of it beggars belief, but as Professor Ross Dowling says, and as we've heard, I don't know whether you've heard those recordings of the conversation with the Coast Guard captain who assumes responsibility, he was saying, get on that ladder at the bow, get back on board. This is your ship, this is your responsibility, get back on board. Interesting to hear your point of view, Alec. Thank you very much. But I hope your boating is always safe and never involves you have to go through that safety routine.
I've been on a couple that have been on fire, but we've managed to get them out, so that's all right.
Good on you. Stay safe, okay. Alec. Thank you very much. Alec in Townsville, 1300 800 222. Here's Roxanne in Brisbane, who's also been on a lot of cruises. How many have you been on, Roxanne?
About 10.
Yeah, what's the attraction?
It really feels like a holiday. And as the previous callers have said, you can do as much as you like or as little as you like. Be involved in all the... We do destination cruises as well, like we've been to Alaska, and we go to all the lectures on the environment, the geology of the area, and it's always interesting to... You get more out of the holidays, but then there's the ones that would just prefer... People that just like the eating and the casino and that part of it as well, so you can get as much out of the cruise as you want, or just have it as a holiday.
And
we've recently been to the Mediterranean as well, and we went to Egypt and Israel, and they're countries that I wasn't very comfortable. It was actually cancelled by the cruise line earlier in the year. We didn't cancel our cruise. We just said, well, we'll let the cruise line decide whether it's safe to go there or whether it's not, because we had full confidence in the cruise line in making that decision, and Egypt had become safer.
Okay.
So we got to experience Egypt, and the security issues and everything were dealt with the company, and we found it very safe.
What about the onboard safety issues? You went through the drills, did you?
Oh, that's mandatory. They actually mark your name off the list. And
again, your fellow passengers, everyone pays attention, takes it seriously, puts on a... Because you actually go through the routine of putting a life jacket on and having to tie it on, don't you?
The captain comes on and tells you that the drill is at this time and you have to go to your muster station. So you go to your room, you get your life jacket, you meet at the muster station, and it's taken very seriously by all the staff and all the people, passengers on the ship.
And that's very reassuring to you?
Yes, yes. Mm. We're actually going on a cruise in, 3 months' time around the Hawaiian Islands, and there's lots of rocks and things around there, I'm sure.
Mm.
But I'm not worried as well.
But you understand the question I put to Professor Dowling, you know, the technology that must be available on the bridge of these ships these days, you'd think, you know, 100 kilometres before you went within any chance of hitting a rock, there'd be radar and sonar and alarms and things.
What this captain has said isn't true, because they have satellite images of him being as close to the island as a couple of weeks previously as well.
Yeah, it doesn't look...
When he's saying, no, I don't do that.
Doesn't look good for him.
Mm. No.
All right.
But I find it a very safe way and very relaxing and a wonderful way to holiday.
Good on you, Roxanne. Don't forget every now and then to go to the internet cafe, though, and listen into ABC Radio online, find out what's going on.
What that gentleman was saying about not knowing what's going on, all the recent cruises I've been on, they've all got... CNN and all the other...
They've
got an on-ship, there's radio, and, you know, they have all the technology
now. They still have their own newspapers?
Yes, every day. What was the story once? Oh, not a newspaper. Is that more telling you what's happening with on the ship, not happening.
Yeah, be more.
But you can go to the internet cafes and, you know, go on to the ABC and see what's happening in Brisbane and everything.
Yeah, log on, listen to overnights and find out what you're missing while you're away.
Yes, that's right.
Well, happy cruising. Enjoy Hawaii.
Thank you.
I shall go to Clive in WA in just a moment, but just on the SMS. Luke in Bendigo says, "Hi, Tony. I spent July in Venezia, saw the Concordia float past in the Grand Canal. Lots of liners pass through every day, but I wouldn't take one myself." Thanks, Luke. Adam in Bunbury says, "Tony, I cruised on the Great Barrier Reef. Best thing I've ever done. The captain was brilliant." And Linda in Mossman says, "Tony, I went on a cruise about 20 years ago on the since-sunk Akililaro, and I hated it. I say, fly and spend more time at your destination or destinations." Linda, thank you very much. 5 minutes away from news. If you want to call quickly on 1-300-800-222, we would be able to get you on. Gary has called in and says, "Why not have two captains? Wouldn't that help stop these type of situations?" I suppose it's like having co-captains of a football team like they do sometimes, that eventually someone's got to make the decision, I suppose. Who does the buck stop with? Clive, greetings to you. You're going on a cruise later this year, are you?
That's correct. Tony, it's the Queen's Diamond Jubilee.
Yes.
And it'll be the first time that the three Queens will be in Southampton, and we're doing the three of them.
Oh, they're all going to get together in June, are they?
Yeah, May.
As part of the salute to the Queen's Diamond Jubilee.
That's correct.
Wow. So where will you board it? Where are you going?
We're flying over to London.
Yeah.
And of course, down to Southampton, then boarding the Victoria first for 14 days, then the Queen Elizabeth for 13 days, and then the Queen Mary for 5 days.
Wowee.
It's a package they put together in Perth, actually, and the day of this accident happening, we booked.
Before or after you heard?
Just before you. Yeah, my wife was putting our wheels in order, actually.
Well, you know, you've got to be careful, I suppose, haven't you? Someone was telling me there was something before in one of the bits of information I had, that someone had written that themed tours are popular, and there's talk of one being a Titanic recreation or recreation cruise. You know, I don't think they're going to go quite the same way as the Titanic went in recreating that voyage. But again, as I said earlier this morning, they're very different times, weren't they? That Titanic was a means of transportation. What you're talking about is optional. It's a holiday. It's tourism, isn't it?
That's correct. Yeah. Well, we were looking to do in Australia, doing the gang, actually, and all of a sudden this ad came in the paper, and I said, well, that'd be brilliant, you know. It'd do the three queens in one hit, you know.
And at any stage, do any of the ships, I know there's I doubt they fit up the Thames, I know there's a great big sail pass planned in the Thames as part of the Diamond Jubilee, but at any stage, is the Queen involved in any of this? The Queen, no. Queen Elizabeth II, I mean.
Not that I know of.
There's not a massive armada of ships forming up and the Queen will be saluted by them or anything like that?
Not as far as I know. You know, all I know, they're leaving from Southampton. We haven't had the full plan of where it's actually going.
What a fantastic trip. I tell you what, Clive, if you hear me on air later on the year and you've been, I'd love you to give me a call and let me know how it all
no
went.
Worries.
Look forward to it.
Yeah, and the other thing is we're actually flying on a 380 too.
Oh, rub it in, why don't you? Three Queens plus the A380, I tell you. Yeah. Good luck to you, Clive. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Steve in Tassie now. And, Steve, you're about to head off for your first cruise. Are you worried?
It wasn't until what happened the other day. My wife and I are going on a first-time cruise, leaving Sydney out to Noumea and the islands, South Pacific.
Well, you know what they say, if something like this happens, then it's probably a long time before it'll happen again.
Hope so. Yeah.
And what's the temptation for you? Why have you decided to do it?
It's just hearsay from other people that have been on cruises and really liked it, so we decided to go on one ourselves.
Well, and is it a major celebration or something for you?
No, not really. No, just a well-earned holiday, I think.
All right. Oh, well, yeah. And when are you leaving?
Oh, we leave actually on Anzac Day.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope it goes all extremely well for you. Thanks for giving us a call. I have to go because we're almost up to news time. But there you go. Most people who've done it a lot thoroughly enjoy it and are quite keen on continuing to do it.